Well, hello, good morning, and welcome back to the program. At the Saratoga Performing Arts Center last year, they had more than 200 events on their campus, including a total of 10,000 visitors, 50 people at a time, from July to December. This year will be different, thank goodness. But how different? Well, to find out, we welcome the CEO and president of the Saratoga Performing Arts Center, better known as SPAC, Elizabeth Sobel, to our program, and it's a great pleasure to welcome you back. How are you?
Oh, Joe, it's always great to be on your show. And we are, yes, a mixture of joyous and anticipatory, and also just dealing with a lot of fraught complexities as we figure out how the heck we're going to do this summer. But we are excited to be welcoming audience and artists back to our campus. That's what we do.
The day the governor talked about just sort of like opening up things to full access, and you were trying to figure out, a group of us from WMC were up on the SPAC campus, and you were showing off some of your beautiful new buildings, which we can get into in a moment, and just having the most gorgeous view. And so some of those complexities have been answered, and yet now with the CDC's guidelines, I assume you even have more complexities to deal with.
Yes, I mean, we do. I mean, when you and I put this date on the calendar, maybe you were more prescient than I was, but I didn't realize that, you know, today would be sort of the new dawn in many ways, but also the ushering in of, as you say, new complexities. You know, I thought, if you don't mind, I might like wind up a little bit a couple of months prior to how we were, you know, approaching all this, and why right now it's a different landscape. You know, when we've been planning the summer for a year, from May 18, when we had to cancel the whole summer, we immediately started saying to ourselves, no matter what happens next year, we must have some on-campus presence from our beloved resident companies, and that was the thing that guided us. You know, whether we were able to bring in 100 people as audience members, or 1,000, or multi-thousands, whatever, we knew we had to make that happen. And so we were looking at scenarios that included opening the amphitheater if capacities were, you know, large enough capacities were allowed, but we also looked at very small scenarios that would only bring in, you know, a couple hundred people at a time. So we have been working tirelessly internally, and also with the resident companies, because they obviously have many concerns on their own ends, which we can get into in a sec. But when January hit and we knew that we had to start looking to pull the trigger on one of many scenarios that we had come up with, We started biweekly dialogues with the governor's office. The state DOH was very involved. And, you know, the guidelines were incredibly strict. I think that, you know, the average, you know, the general public reads the headlines, but they obviously have no reason to dig down into the actual legal guidance on reopening. And when we had chosen our various scenarios for reopening in about March, we had to submit a plan to the State Department of Health. It was a 60-page, very detailed document, event safety plan, really detailing everything from how we were going to sell tickets, how we were going to get people parked, how we were going to get people through the gates, how we were going to keep restrooms clean, how we were going to seat people. I mean, it was an enormously detailed document. And so it had to be presented to the state DOH. They gave us a lot of input on it. We changed it. We resubmitted it. And so I say all this because I think that, you know, again, people read the headlines and then they think, oh, well, it's yours to interpret what you're going to do, and you can just turn the lights on and open the doors and all is going to be well. But it's much more complicated than that. So we have been adhering very strictly to the New York State mandated guidelines. I think what's changed in the last week is that there is now more opportunity for flexibility, but the choices now, there are a variety of choices, you know, and so choosing the options that at one time keep people the safest and make people feel the most secure in this new era that we're into, while also giving people a real taste of being back at SPAC and not losing that joyous celebratory quality to tons of rules and regulations. That is a tightrope that we are walking, every single day. And that will not change as we now try to incorporate some of these broader flexibilities into what we're doing.
So I don't want to get caught up on this, so I'll just ask the question, and then you can answer it however you wish, and then we'll get on to the good stuff, if you will, of what you're going to be presenting this summer. But so do I have to be vaccinated to go to SPAC this summer?
No. No, you do not. And this is one of the philosophical questions that has fallen now upon the shoulders of the individual organizations. You know, one could choose to make the venue an all-vaccinated venue, and then none of the restrictions would apply. Social distancing, masking, all of that would be out the door. There's two reasons. There's actually three reasons for not doing that. Number one, you know, if you're a commercial organization or a privately held company or whatever, do whatever you want to do. For a 501c3, a not-for-profit serving the community, philosophically, we don't feel that we can discriminate against people for choices they've made along the way. As much as I'd love to see everybody vaccinated and our staff is vaccinated, you know, we don't feel that we can discriminate against, you know, people for the choices they've made. So, and another aspect of this is that, you know, there are a lot of people who have been vaccinated who still want to wear their masks and still want to observe social distancing, you know. So another one of our sort of existential challenges, because we do serve a community, is that, you know, our audience members, patrons, donors, whatever, run the gamut from the people who are vaccinated and still want that extra protection of masking and social distancing. And on the other side, the people who haven't been vaccinated and haven't, you know, haven't really chosen to wear masks. And so how do you accommodate all of those people, make them feel welcome and comfortable, but also keep everybody safe? You know, so that's, you know, that's a big piece of this as well. And then the third thing is a logistical issue, because again, you know, we can't get this guidance from the governor's office and turn on a dime any more than a battleship can, you know, turn on a dime in the water. We, as we were making the plans to reopen this summer, and at the time when we were having to pull the trigger on programming, we had to make certain decisions. And at that time, the guidance said your seating must be socially distanced. So what does that mean, practically speaking? We literally took many, many seats and rows out of the amphitheater, physically took them out, not just blocking them, in order to create true social distancing in the amphitheater. When you do true social distancing in the amphitheater, you reduce your capacity from 5,200 seats down to about 1,200. So because we had to put New York City Ballet on sale in early May, the guidelines were still socially distancing. So we configured the amphitheater. We put our seat maps based on that configuration online. People have bought thousands and thousands of tickets according to that seat map. You know, we can't now just tear up all those tickets and say, okay, we're going to have half of the house is going to be vaccinated and the other half won't, right? And also, people who have bought tickets counting on the fact that they're not going to have people sitting right next to them, we can't betray that trust by all of a sudden saying, oh, capacities are, you know, unlimited now, we're going to seat people next to you. So at any rate, as you can see, like every day there is a mind-bending number of logistical, philosophical, and other questions that we confront literally, you know, literally every day and on every aspect of our operation, from ticketing and marketing and, you know, to operations, getting people in and out, not allowing congregating at egress and ingress points. How are you disinfecting thousands of seats and keeping bathrooms disinfected for thousands of ticket buyers? So it is overwhelming, to say the least.
I can't even imagine. I really can't. And you know, as I said, you and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and I couldn't imagine it then. I can't imagine it now. So Elizabeth Sobel is our guest, president and CEO of Saratoga Performing Arts Center in Saratoga Springs, and we're talking about what this season holds. And I do want to get to the real excitement here, but just two follow-up questions. And one is, so you have physically taken seats out then, right? You physically have taken the rows out. So, and I know, and I I swear to you, I'm not asking this question to cause trouble. But what does that mean for like a Live Nation event? Do they have to comply with the same rules in the sense of if you have a Rod Stewart concert, does that mean that their capacity is only 1,200?
Well, so this is a speculative, question because, you know, they in theory, like they march to a different drummer. However, they too have to live according to the New York State mandated guidelines. What I will tell you is that when Trey Anastasio appears at SPAC June 18, 1920, and that is a Live Nation show, they are using our protocols. The difference between the seating for them and the seating for us is that we've configured two-person pods with some singles scattered around, and that is based on our data that most of our ticket buyers do not come in groups of four. They come in groups of two. Obviously, there's some exceptions, but we had to go with sort of the general. So our pods are in twos. Live Nations are in fours because, again, they look at their data and they see that people tend to come in bigger groups. So, but other than that, the protocols are going to be the same. You know, clearly there have been, and by the way, they would have the same issue in terms of this, you know, vax section versus non-vax section because they've sold all their tickets, right?
Right.
So you're not going to, like, tear up, you know, three nights of tickets and start the whole process over again. So I think the hope and plan is that as we inch, you know, later into the summer, that there will be enough data that these large events have been safe and that we have been able to keep people secure and transmission out of the picture. And the hope is that Live Nation at some point this summer will be back in a more full operation. That's the hope.
That is the hope. So let's talk about the way we figured out we would do this is that you and I would talk about what's happening to say mid-July, and then we'll have you come back and talk about what's going on for the rest of the summer then, because quite frankly, there's still a lot of balls up in the air. What we do know is the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center is coming. We also know, and this must just be joy to your heart, it's sold out.
Yeah, those are historic words. I'm not sure there was ever a classical presentation at SPAC that could be called sold out. So this is historic, very gratifying.
Now, on the heels of that, July 14th through the 17th, you were bringing the New York City Ballet back to SPAC. And one of the things that stuck with me on the car ride home after our conversation was that this is really miraculous that they're coming to Saratoga, because for the past 18 months, they have not been rehearsing. So really,
correct,
the first time that anyone is going to get a chance to see the New York City Ballet is at SPAC. You were doing it both on stage and off stage. And so what can people expect?
Right. So if you will allow me to elaborate a little bit on this,
please,
just to give people a sense of how we came to this decision. So we were in touch. Obviously, we were talking constantly to New York City Ballet, you know, from that fateful May 18 last year to, you know, all the way through this time. And, you know, many people who follow the ballet may know that a lot of the dancers, you know, once their season was canceled, they left town. A lot went back to live with parents or family members. A lot got out of New York City because they didn't want to be there or couldn't afford the rents while they were, you know, not performing. And so they all, many scattered. And obviously, during the worst days of the pandemic, for a long time, they couldn't even get into Lincoln Center, into their home at the Koch Theater to rehearse or, you know, take class or any of that. So when we started getting into these discussions, it became more and more evident that it would be virtually impossible to recall, you know, all the whole troupe and the expense of rehearsing, you know, the whole company is like, it's literally millions of dollars. People don't understand like the costs involved in these, you know, very large prestigious company. So they had a lot of challenges on their end. And then another layer of this, again, these are the kinds of things that, you know, the general public doesn't think about, but each, you know, the collective bargaining agreements that underlie the relationships with the dancers, you know, the dancers union, the musicians union, stagehands unions, whatever, there is a clause in their contract that says that the dancers have to be informed by mid-April as to what is happening for the summer season. And so we were also under a deadline to pull the trigger so that they could inform the dancers. We had to let them know in mid-April. Well, in mid-April, we were still, you know, social distancing. In a normal year, we have literally hundreds multi-hundreds of people backstage for a New York City ballet performance. And you've got 60 musicians in a pit crammed like sardines in a tin can. You know, well, that's not possible. So, you know, so it became very clear just from a health social distancing point of view that we couldn't have the orchestra up here because they couldn't sit socially distanced in the pit. And after all, how do you do a pas de deux socially distance? You know, right. How do you put hundreds of dancers in dressing rooms and rehearsal halls? So these were the things that we were, you know, challenged with. And then, you know, we kept saying, look, we have to have these dancers back up here. We have to have some presence of the New York City Ballet. And so they have these stripped down presentations called On and Off the Stage. And essentially it is taking excerpts of, you know, beloved Balanchine and other ballets. And rather than having a full-blown production with, you know, hundreds of like musicians and dancers with full costumes, we're having a company of complete, I think it's 25 people total coming up here, who will do these excerpts in stripped-down production. But there will also be New York City Ballet dancers sort of talking about, giving the context of, you know, why this ballet, what inspired this, you know, what was the backstory of that music or whatever, and really kind of giving a behind-the-scenes look to this company that we love so much, but we've never really peeked behind the curtain, you know? And so I think that people are going to, you know, as much as they wish they were seeing the lush productions that have been coming to Saratoga for over 50 years, I actually think that they're going to be really delighted and thrilled to see this this unique look behind the curtain. So,
and not that... It seems to me that because you're really rebuilding the wheel here, because if that's a saying, I don't know, you're rebuilding the mouse. I don't know what you're rebuilding, but in the sense that they have not done this in the city and bringing it up. So this will be the first time. So I assume they will learn from this experience, bringing it back to the city as to what the hell they're going to do come fall.
Well, I think that they are counting on, and particularly now with the recent announcements by the governor and the mayor of New York City, that they will be back in their halls by the fall. And so I think that they are very, you know, very focused on rehearsals and bringing the dancers back, you know, as quickly as they can. But I think they're counting on having this time now to be able to rehearse for the fall. Because, again, like any of the stuff that any of us does, you know, these are not things that you can do in a week or even in a month, you know. So, I mean, I think that, you know, the kind of presentations that they're doing up here, they have done similar ones through their education department that are more like, you know, in a sort of a, what we would call in the business, a lecture demo presentation. That sounds very dry to me, but it is sort of like an alternating performance with talking to sort of give you that background and give you that context and give you that history and sort of contextualize what's going on in a way that you don't get, frankly, in a full-blown performance.
You also have opera coming. Opera Saratoga will be performing July 8th through the 10th. Where will they be performing?
So this is one of the things I am most excited about. Larry Adelson from Opera Saratoga is a great friend of mine and an inspiration, and the work that he and the company do in Saratoga is absolutely incredible. They are normally in the Spa Little Theater, which is 1935, never been renovated, is definitely, you know, COVID challenged in terms in many ways. And so he opted early on not to go into that theater because, after all, when you've got a lot of singers, you know, the issues around transmission and aerosols is a much bigger issue than other types of performance. So we started talking early about his doing a musical in the amphitheater. So we are partnering on this and welcoming Opera Saratoga and Man of La Mancha into the SPAC amphitheater on those dates. And I think this is going to be awesome. I think that, you know, it's going to fill out the, you know, the classical programming in July in a way we haven't frankly had for many, many decades.
One of the things, we're running a little bit short on time, so I want to make sure that we have this. You have something launching today, which is Soundwalk. You did this last year, right? So this is doing it again, which is really cool.
Yeah, so Soundwalk, you know, last year when people were, you know, really saw the park and the grounds at SPAC, or, you know, as kind of their refuge and a place to, you know, to get outside, to be with nature, and in certain instances to be with other people. We wanted to do something that really, you know, melded our you know, sort of twin, or, you know, our two North Stars, if that's something that's kind of contradictory. But at any rate, you know, art and nature. And so Ellen Reed, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning composer, had a project that she started fast-tracking, which involved her going out into large tracts of natural land and creating a compositional composition that would then be GPS-enabled, so that the listener could walk through the park and be washed over by these beautiful compositions that correspond to the natural landscape. And so she came up to Saratoga and mapped some of this out, and we launched it last fall. So we had it for a couple of months, and it was a finite, fixed, you know, area that she was working with. And she so loved Saratoga and the park that she wanted to come up and do it again and double the area of that she covered and write new music. So we're not only launching it with a much more expanded footprint, but it's also going to be up for a whole year rather than the 3 months we had last year.
Very cool. People can find out about information on all that is going on at SPAC in the ever-changing world that is the performing arts these days by going to SPAC.org, SPAC.org. I have a minute, and I just want to tell you, as you know, Elizabeth, that you're I can't imagine, you know, all that we've been through over the last year and a half has just been amazing and weird. But I feel sorry for you, because you now have these most amazing, new, incredible buildings that you haven't been able to show off yet. And I am so thrilled that people will actually get to see, because SPAC looks different now and it's absolutely stunning. You all did just an amazing job.
Thank you. I mean, the Pines Terrace, which I can't wait for people to see, it's called the Pines at SPAC, and it's several different buildings, including our first indoor year-round education space. But there's a gorgeous terrace looks out over the tree line and the amphitheater, which is now my favorite spot on earth.
It's really beautiful, and congratulations to everyone, and congratulations to your entire team. You have a wonderful team and working so hard to make this a reality and to bringing us something that we so desperately need, and that is the performing arts. Elizabeth Sobel, it is always wonderful to speak to you and to converse. I look forward to our next conversation, and I thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you so much, Joe. Look forward to seeing you over here. Take care.
Be well. Thank you. Elizabeth Sobel is the president and CEO of SPAC. Again, you can find out more at SPAC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.